This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
You are Locked On Yankees, your daily New York Yankees podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are listening to the Locked On Yankees podcast, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Stacey Gotsoulias, and I'm the host of Locked On Yankees. I'm a baseball writer and a podcast host, and you may have read my work at places like Baseball Prospectus, The Hardball Times, Sporting News, and the ESPN Sweet Spot blog. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Yankees, all one word. You can find me on Twitter at StaceGots. We also have an Instagram account at Locked On Yankees, all one word. So follow, like, comment, and do what you do on Instagram. If you're a new listener, hello and welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. I hope you all enjoyed today's episode. I'm very excited to announce that my guest on today's show is the one and only David Cohn. We talk about baseball, we talk about broadcasting, we talk about life in general and growing up and music and TV and all that good stuff. And I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. So let's get to it. First, you can get Locked On Yankees and all other Locked On podcasts straight to your phone in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the new Odyssey app, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Yankees. I've been teasing this nearly the entire week, and we're finally here. My special guest is here with me, and I'll give you some hints, kind of like I'm Nina Blackwood on the Sirius XM 80s on 8 countdown. They're easy hints. You'll get them. He's a Cy Young winner, five-time All-Star. He's won the World Series with two different teams, both in the AL East. He's played for the Mets and Yankees. He pitched a perfect game on July 18th, 1999, and he's currently a broadcaster for the YES Network. It is my absolute pleasure and honor to welcome David Cohn to Locked On Yankees. David, how are you today?
Stacey, I'm doing great. You're impressing me with Nina Blackwood reference there. That was pretty strong right out of the gate.
Are you as tired as I am after last night's debacle?
Yes, I am. You know, the first week of the season feels like, wow, you know, there's a lot to unpack. And boy, you know, it's too early in the season to go on a rant about the rules. But yeah, I have a feeling we may get into that at some point.
I'm one of those people, I try to, and I always say this to my listeners too, I try to practice Zen baseball and I try not to get upset too early in the season. You know, the playoffs are everything, all bets are off for the playoffs. You can get as angry as you want in the playoffs. But in the beginning of April, you don't want to get to the point where you want to throw yourself out a window. But I felt like that last night after watching last night's game.
Yes.
Now, what's it like for you as a broadcaster? Because when I listen to other home broadcasts, nothing against them, but a lot of them are so homerish and outwardly rooting for the teams. And I think you and Michael Kay do a really good job of not doing that. And is it hard for you to not do stuff like that when you see a game like last night's being played?
Oh, you hit the nail on the head, Stacey. That is really the thing I think about most of all, is trying to be balanced and, you know, as much as you can. We all like to see the Yankees play well. I know most of these guys, you know, and they're all good guys. You know, you want to pull for the vast majority of them are all decent guys. So, you know, but at the same time, you have to be honest. So, you know, it's a tough line to kind of, you know, to stay right in the center there. And, but you're right. I mean, that is so important to pay respect to both sides and really the intellect of the baseball fan. I mean, you guys know what you're doing. You guys know, you know the game, and we can't fool you. You know, right. Stacey, if I don't play down the middle, you know, we're going to get killed.
Right. Well, I have to say, when I was getting my vaccination on Saturday, I was wearing my David Cohn perfect game t-shirt, and a man who was coming out from getting his second shot was raving about you, saying how great you are at your job and how smart you are and that you're one of the best broadcasters out there. And that's what everyone says about you, that, you know, you played in a different era than what's happening now. Like, baseball has changed a lot in the last 20 years, and there are some broadcasters who embrace it and you embrace it, and there are others who don't. So we appreciate the fact that you, I mean, you know, baseball's not perfect right now. There are a lot of things that they can fix, but we enjoy the fact that you're not sitting on TV bitching and moaning and longing for the old days.
Oh God, you're so right. Thank you for saying that. And I think about that a lot as well. I love the game of baseball, man. I love the players. I've always been a player's advocate. I was a union representative, you know, I was an American League representative for 10 years. You know, I've always advocated on behalf of the players, and, you know, I love them. I love the game. I think we're seeing some of the best pitching I've ever seen in my life, Stacy. I mean, some of these pitches that are being thrown in there across the board, and some of these relievers that are throwing 100 miles an hour with regularity. I mean, I'm just fascinated by it. I find, you know, I'm biased because I'm an ex-pitcher. I'm an old goat pitcher. But, you know, for me, it's, I love watching it. I think there's a lot of good in the game, a lot of talent. And yes, you're right. There's some tweaking that can be done. There's some more action. Yes, there's things that can be done maybe to speed up the pace a little bit. But the overall product, I love.
Yeah, that's, you know, you brought up a good point. I mean, it's unbelievable how many guys there are out there who can throw 100 with regularity, and these big, like, you know, Randy Johnson was an anomaly. I mean, he still is because he was really big, but you have these guys who were 6'7", 6'8", pitching with regularity. And, you know, Tyler Glass now is a big dude. You know, and he's a starter. You have relievers, you know, Dellin Betances, Andrew Miller, all these guys who are 6'7", 6'8", throwing really hard pitches. And then you have the guys, now I can't even remember his name, and he pitched last night. He made the Yankees look like fools, and he wasn't even hitting 90 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, Cesar Valdez. Yes.
Yes. And yeah. I just find it fascinating that, you know, I mean, are we going to see pitchers hitting 105 miles an hour in 10 years or so? Or are the guys just going to get bigger and stronger? Because it feels like that could happen.
You're right. That's the trend, you know, and that, you know, that's the thing I noticed this year in doing my prep work for games and then, you know, going down the rosters on pitchers. And you really have to follow pitchers year to year because there's big jumps in velocity because they're training for velocity. They're throwing weighted balls. Pitchers are pushing as far as training goes, they're pushing the system, you know, much more than that has ever been done before. And I think that's why you're seeing more injuries. You see more Tommy John injuries and surgeries, but certainly the velocity year after year is being pushed. So I don't think we know what the limit is at this point. I know we're just going to see more and more hard throwers, a lot of relievers, you know, and I equate it, Stacy. I remember for Yankee fans, go back to when Jabba Chamberlain first broke in with the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we thought, oh, we finally have one of those relievers that can throw 100 with a really, really good curveball or nasty slider. Well, everybody's got those guys now. Nick Nelson is Jabba Chamberlain right now. I mean, the stuff is over the last 20 years just jumped, especially in the bullpens.
Yeah, it's really, you know, you see these guys pitch. And, you know, for the Yankees so far, their pitching hasn't been the issue. It's been the hitting. But you see all these different types of pitchers and, you know, the construction of the bullpens now, even the construction of the pitching staff overall, how much that's changed, even in the last, I would say even as recently as 5 years, with the idea of having the opener and having someone come in who only pitches 4 or 5 innings, and then you can bring the rest of the bullpen in. What is your thought of that process?
Yeah, I think it's a byproduct of what we just talked about, is that if you're a major league manager now or a major league pitching coach, you know, you have two choices, and you have many more options. Do you push your starting pitcher to try to get him through 7 innings? Or do you bring one of those 100-mile-an-hour relief pitchers in sooner, you know, and save your starter a little bit here and there? There's just many more options. You know, Stacy, when I broke in with the Mets in the 80s, you know, our middle relievers were throwing 85 miles an hour or the 88 miles an hour. Right. You know, the middle reliever for the 1988 Mets was Doug Sisk. He was a sinker baller. Roger McDowell was a sinker baller. They were finesse pitchers. And, you know, so the starters had to throw more innings. And nowadays, they just don't have to, because you have somebody like the Blue Jays have, Julian Merriweather, who you've never heard of, come in the game throwing 100 miles an hour with a nasty slider and a really good changeup. It's just incredible. There's just more options for managers to use.
In a moment, more of my conversation with David Cohn, but first, if you like to bet online, you should go to betonline.ag because they're the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. You can bet on the NBA, you can bet on the NHL, and you can bet on baseball. And it doesn't just have to be baseball games. You can bet on stuff that's not even happening for months. You can bet on who's going to make the playoffs, who's going to win the divisions, who's going to win the Cy Young Award, who's going to win MVP. You can even bet on award shows, TV shows, and reality TV. You get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. When I still wrote about baseball, I liked looking at people's pitching performances and going into the systems and looking at where they placed their pitches, what the velocity was, the sequence of the pitches. And, you know, when you have a guy who can throw in the upper 90s and then also throw something that's 86 miles an hour and just fool the batters, that's one of the, I think it's one of the most fun things to watch as a baseball viewer, when you have a guy that has that many options in his arsenal and he just embarrasses batters on a daily basis. That's always a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I always thought I'm a little too biased because I'm a pitcher. So I like those pitcher centric things, but I find it fascinating too. I mean, the cat and mouse game between the pitchers and hitters nowadays and how hard it is to hit.
Yeah.
You know, and giving these pitchers credit rather than saying, oh, why, how did you swing at that pitch? Or why can't you make more contact, or you strike out too much? And yes, I get it, but look at that pitch. Right. It's hard to hit.
Well, it's funny. There was a conversation on Twitter yesterday because someone who covers the White Sox was complaining about the game that they had against the Mariners the other night. Cause I think it was 3 hours, 48 minutes. There were 25 strikeouts, only 9 walks. There wasn't a lot of contact. And, you know, there's a lot of complaining about that sort of thing. And I understand it because you don't want to sit at a baseball game for 4 hours, especially if you're covering it. I get that. As a fan, we don't care that much about it because we're sitting at home. Usually if we're at the stadium, it's a bit of a slog, but if we're at home, it's not a big deal. But what can you do? You can't do anything about that. If these pitchers are that good and the hitters can't adjust to them, this is what baseball is like right now. And we just, I guess, have to deal with it. I think maybe in, I was wondering what you were thinking about the idea of a pitch clock, because there are some pitchers who take way too long. And I joke about that, where they take so long to throw between pitches that they board the batters and that's how the batters strike out. But what do you think about the idea of having a pitch clock regularly in MLB?
Yeah, I am very open-minded about that. You know, I know there's some people, there are some pitchers who don't like it. They don't want to feel rushed. You know, David Price of the Dodgers said something to that effect of, you know, we're taught by sports psychiatrists to slow the game down. And, and here we are trying to put a pitch clock in to make us rush. And, you know, but I do have an open mind. I think it's worked in the minor leagues. And you're right, Stacey, for those, chronic abusers of time, shall we say, yes, that maybe they need to be sped up a little bit. We saw it with one of the Blue Jay relievers, Dolis. Dolis took 45 seconds between one pitch one time. I mean, he was averaging that much, over a half a minute in between pitches. And it was just too much. You know, it was just really over the line. So, yeah, I'm open-minded about that. Maybe we do need to take another look at that.
Because when I had season tickets, I had the Sunday night plan. So Sunday nights were always ESPN games. So I was always stuck watching the Yankees play the Red Sox. And those games were notoriously long anyway, but adding the ESPN thing to it and then adding Josh Beckett to it, who was notoriously slow when he pitched. There were times when I was living in Manhattan and I would get home from the Yankee Red Sox game at 2:30 in the morning.
Yes, that's dedication. That's for sure.
I had a night one time that I actually called my boss at 2:30 in the morning and left her a voicemail. I said, I just want you to know, I literally just got home. If I'm late tomorrow, this is why. And the next morning she's like, I figured. She's like, every time they have a Sunday night game, I know you're going to be late. It's okay. So I have a whole bunch of questions that aren't even baseball, but you played basketball and football in high school because your school didn't have a baseball team, but you were able to play baseball. You played baseball in summer leagues and stuff like that. But during high school, was there anything else that you did besides sports? Like, what kind of a student were you? What kind of a person were you during those years?
You know, it's funny, you know, I was not a great student. I was probably a B student. You know, I was okay. I had an interest. I was going to go. I had enrolled in the University of Missouri because they had a really good journalism school. Hmm. And that was my plan. I wrote for the school newspaper. You know, the high school I went to, you know, I actually was a writer. And so that's what kind of got me on that track. I didn't know that I was going to be good enough to play sports professionally, but I was, you know, I was interested in trying to find a way to make a living doing it somehow, some way. You know, and I joke that maybe it was from watching too many episodes of The Odd Couple and trying to be like Oscar Madison. I wanted to have an apartment in Manhattan and have a peanut butter sandwich underneath my pillow, you know, and go to the Mets games. And, you know, that was my dream life back when I was 17 years old.
See, that's funny because I was going to ask you that. You know, what did you watch when you were a kid? Because you were, you know, the 70s was a fun time for TV and for music. I know you like Steely Dan, right? But what else do you like?
Oh, yes. You know, Stacey, you and I have very similar tastes, you know, because I follow you on Twitter. Obviously, we've known each other for a while now. And you always bring a smile to my face when you get into pop culture. So we definitely think alike as far as that goes. But yeah, all the normal 70s shows, you know, I mean, huge, huge Red Fox fan, Sanford and Son, huge Odd Couple fan, you know, Jack Klugman, Tony Randall, The Odd Couple, you know, The Courtship of Eddie's Father. Remember that show? Watching that show, Beverly Hillbillies. I mean, you name it, I was on it. As far as music goes, you know, I had one brother who was a real rock and roll guy and another brother who was into kind of funk and jazz. Mm. So, you know, I listened to, you know, even Steely Dan's in the middle there somewhere, but I was AC/DC, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin. And then my brother one day had me listen to an album by Rufus and Chaka Khan, and it blew me away. my music is really all over the board, you know. And I mentioned the group Houdini from the 80s and
oh, yes.
70s. I was kind of back and forth, you know. I make it, if you're going to listen to music, if it's rock and roll, make it rock. If it's funk, make it funky. You know, if it's disco, let's dance. You know, that was the era back then. You know, we started to listen to everything at that point rather than get pigeonholed into one style. And then new wave, you know, in the 80s when disco and rock and roll were clashing, new wave kind of came in and saved the world, I think. I think new wave saved the world, Stacey, back in the early 80s. So that's my story.
See, it's funny that you said that because, you know, I was born in 74, but my mom listened to the radio constantly. Like, she fed me with the radio on. So there are songs that I can remember from 1975, 76, because the radio was always on. My dad liked doo-wop. He liked the oldies, but he also was into country, which I find the funniest thing ever that a Greek American guy from the Bronx loved the country music so much. And when Urban Cowboy happened, oh, there were too many guys from New York thinking they could be cowboys, Gus included. He had a Stetson. He grew a beard. He started wearing dark jeans with cowboy boots and silk cowboy tops because of that movie. And because of my parents having such different tastes, my mom was into disco. She was into funk, R&B. So I grew up on, you know, the Spinners and Marvin Gaye and disco music and Top 40 and stuff like that. So that's why when you see me on Twitter and I'm talking about all different types of music, it's because of my parents. And because I have friends with older siblings, I was introduced to AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, The Police, The Go-Go's. I found out about The Go-Go's before they even hit it big because of my friend's older brother. I found out about Duran Duran before they hit it big because my friend's older sister went to college with a girl from England who brought their first album over. So before Rio even hit, I knew about them. So it is funny how all the different influences in your life work and how it shapes your musical taste when you grow up.
Yeah. So true. It's, you know, you brought back a lot of memories for me right there. I mean, you hit some pretty high notes there, but yes, it really is. I mean, culturally speaking too, as well. I mean, how you dressed, how you thought, you know, what you listened to, and, you know, it opened your mind. It really did. Different various styles of music really kind of lead you down a path to more diversity, more open-mindedness. And, you know, and to me, it's all just fantastic.
In a moment, more of my conversation with David Cohn, but first, it's Built Bar time. Time for me to tell you that you need to buy Built Bar because it is the best protein bar ever. It comes in a bunch of amazing flavors, including my favorites, mint brownie, double chocolate, coconut almond, coconut brownie chunk. Every bar is covered in 100% chocolate. Oh, they have a new birthday cake bar covered in white chocolate and sprinkles. And yes, yes, buy it if you can. Again, bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They're great for the health conscious person. If you want to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat, Built Bar is for you. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great for the keto diet. Right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your next order. That means next, not first. You could have ordered 50 boxes and you'll still get that 15% off. I can't handle how good these are. Now, last week, Built Bar Madness ended. We all found out that Coconut Brownie Chunk was voted the best Built Bar flavor. And I mean, it's right up there with Mint Brownie. It is fantastic. It tastes like it's bad for you, which is my favorite thing about Built Bar. They're good for you, but they're so delicious that they taste like they're bad for you. And that's my favorite thing about them. Again, use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Be a waiver wire winner with the Locked On Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It's a daily fantasy baseball podcast hosted by veteran fantasy analyst Scott Cullen, who uses data and nearly two decades of fantasy baseball experience to offer the strategies and waiver wire pickups that lead to league wins. Follow Locked On Fantasy Baseball on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. So, as I said in the opener, you played for both the Mets and the Yankees, and you played for the late 80s Mets. They were known to be kind of crazy. And you played for the mid to late 90s Yankees, who were all about winning. So what were the major differences? And plus, you know, I mean, there was almost a 10-year difference between the time you were on the Mets and on the Yankees. So baseball was even different in those two eras. But what were the main differences?
Yeah, you know, Stacey, it was certainly in the 80s, it was a different era because teams that traveled together on the road kind of stayed together. I mean, when I was with the Mets, there would be 10 to 15 players going out after games together. You know, it's where are we going tonight? Or if we got into town, we'd go to dinner somewhere. So we kind of traveled in packs in the 80s. And, you know, you contrast that to today's game where it's kind of, you know, it's individualized. The players are very wary of social media. You know, it's hard to see them, to, you know, out in public at all, very much less, you know, here comes 15 Mets players, you know, that are going to take over this bar in whatever city we were in. So yeah, it was a wild time with the Mets. Some of it, I think we went over the line without a doubt. I think we made a lot of mistakes. There was some reckless behavior back in the 80s with that team, but you know, it's so long ago. When you think about it and you try to remember exactly what happened and why, and even going back to some of the barroom fights that the Mets had back then that were famous, you know, you feel like, what were we thinking about? You wish you could go back and have a talk with yourself back then, that young person, you know, like Morgan Freeman in Shawshank Redemption at the end, you know, when he's on parole, he wants to go back and have a talk with his younger self. That's kind of how I feel about my Mets days. I wish I could go back and have a talk with myself and say, hey, don't, you know, watch out. But nonetheless, you contrast that to the 90s, and you're right. I mean, the Yankees, to me, when I got back to New York, it was a second chance for me to get back to New York again. I still had my apartment in Manhattan from my Mets days. So the first day I was traded to the Yankees, I went right to my apartment. I was ready to go. I don't think there's ever been a guy traded to the Yankees that was more ready to go. I knew my way around. I had my apartment. There was no transition at all. I just loved it. You know, that was the best day of my life was when I got traded to the Yankees.
Now, the other night on the broadcast, you were talking about 1995. And it was funny because I was yelling at the TV saying, no, don't talk about this on the air. I wanted to ask you about this, but I'm still going to ask you about it. 1995 for us, especially for my age range, we were too young to remember 77, 78. 1981 is my first year that I really remember baseball. And I ended up falling asleep, crying, listening to the radio the night that the Yankees lost to the Dodgers. And then we had that, you know, for us, really long drought between playoff appearances. 1995 happens. Thank God for the wild card. You know, if the wild card was in existence, the Yankees would have made the playoffs in the 80s at least once. So with the wild card, the Yankees make it to the playoffs. You have those two games in Yankee Stadium. You know, the place is going crazy. The Leyritz home run. And then Seattle happens. And you had mentioned on the broadcast that you couldn't do anything with your arm for weeks after that outing. And as we were saying earlier, that could never happen now. No one would ever keep anyone in a game for that many pitches. And you also said that that probably had something to do with the aneurysm you had in your arm the next year, right?
Yes. Yeah, I believe it did. Yes.
So what was, I mean, I hate rehashing this because everything after 1995 was so positive, but even for us as fans, we were so excited at the beginning of that series and the end of it felt like the end of the world. So I want to know from a player's perspective, what did that feel like?
It felt like the end of the world. You're right. It really did. I've never been in a more devastated clubhouse after a big loss. And I've been through some, you know, I mean, we got knocked Sandy Alomar Jr.'s home run off of Mariano Rivera in 97. Mm-hmm. That was a tough clubhouse, but nothing like after that series in 95. I mean, Buck Showalter was literally crying at some point after that game before he talked to the media. I know I did. I mean, we were like little leaguers. I literally was crying, bawling with my face in a towel like I was 12 years old in Little League. I mean, that's how devastated we were. The flight home from Seattle, wow, what an awful flight. The red eye all the way home, just awful. Jack McDowell and I sitting next to each other. Neither one of us could lift our right arms at that point. we literally just laid it all on the line for that game. Randy Johnson in that series pitched on short rest, one day's rest, came out of the bullpen and pitched. We actually scored a run off of him, you know, in relief. So, yeah, there's so much to unpack in that series, Stacey. And it really was just devastating. Plus, it was Don Mattingly's last game. I think we all kind of knew that, too. You know, we knew that he probably wasn't going to come back. So that was it.
Yeah, Mattingly was my boy. You know, I went to my first game or my first two games. My dad took me. Now, I don't know why he did this. He took me and three of my friends to a single admission doubleheader by himself on a hot summer day to Yankee Stadium. It was the Yankees against the Blue Jays. And my boy was Don Mattingly. So that was double devastation for me because I was so happy that he made the playoffs and then to lose in that way. So that also goes into what was your best moment as a player?
You know, I say this all the time. There's different degrees of you know, trying to define best day or whatnot, you know, certainly, you know, the normal stuff when you make your major league debut.
Right.
There's a sense of pride, you know, that you finally made it because it's so hard just to get to the big leagues. And I hit every level of the minor leagues because I signed out of high school. So it took me, you know, until I was 24 years old. So you can find a better part of 5 years and a lot of doubt along the way. So that was a big day. And then, you know, when you come back from injuries, you know, and you think your career's over, that first game back after my aneurysm in Oakland that day. And, you know, that was another day where you just it felt surreal because you know I really did think I might not pitch again after I heard the news that I had an aneurysm in my arm, in my pitching arm. So, you know, that day was pretty, you know, was pretty good. The perfect game obviously is a big day, but it's down the list. I mean, I'd put that day in Oakland after the aneurysm surgery, that's at the top of the list for me.
I told you the story about how I was supposed to be at your perfect game, but I hurt my leg and I couldn't get there. And so I ended up watching it on TV with my dad, knowing that my brother and his friends were there in my place. And I cried because I was happy for you because it was such a good, I mean, it was just such an amazing day. Plus with the rain delay in the middle, because usually when that happens, the starter's taken out and you actually stayed in the game. So I cried because I was happy for you. And I was also crying because I missed it.
Oh, yes. It was hot that day. So, you know what? It was so hot and my face was so red. When I look back at the tape of that game, I can't believe I looked like my head was going to explode. I mean, it was that hot. And So maybe that was a good one to watch on TV. I don't know.
Well, I did make it to Dwight Gooden's no-hitter. That was the first game that I attended after I got home from school that year. My semester ended the Friday before. That was a Tuesday. And I almost didn't go to that game. I was just tired because I had just gotten home from Oswego, you know, unpacked all my stuff. I was emotionally drained from my year up at school, and finals week was rough. And at the very last minute, at about 5:30, I said to my dad, yeah, I'll go. He's like, okay. Right after the pop-up happened and, you know, everyone's carrying Gooden off the field, my dad looks at me and he's like, you're glad you came, aren't you? I'm like, yes, very glad, yes. Did it feel like
a
movie?
That was a great night. That was a great game, yeah.
Yeah, because it felt like I was watching a movie. It didn't feel like I was there. It was really odd because I was in the main section behind the visitor's dugout, all the way at the back of the old stadium, literally up against the, you know, concrete wall, and didn't see the pop-up. And, you know, it felt like it took 25 minutes for that damn ball to come down. And when they were carrying Gooden off the field, I felt like it was an out-of-body experience for me. So with you and your perfect game, did you feel like you were experiencing it at the time?
That's a great way to put it. It really was, because I didn't really know how to react. And people ask me all the time, you know, did you know how you were going to react? Did you drop to your knees or that reaction? Or was that something you thought about before? And it really wasn't. I didn't know how to react. I was so relieved that there was a pop-up. And when I started to point to the sky, the sun got my eyes. The sun set over the old Yankee Stadium, like right there at that time of day on a late Sunday afternoon in August,
yeah.
Or in July rather, that, you know, I thought maybe Brocious would lose it in the sun too, you know, and that's why I pointed up. But yeah, that was just, to me, it was exhaustion. It was relief. You're so relieved that you didn't blow it. Mm-hmm. And then you don't know how to react at that point. Then you just, you're in process mode. You're trying to process, did this really happen? What do I do now? Do I tip my hat to the crowd? You're just kind of lost, and everybody's swarming you. And by the time I got to the clubhouse and all the media and everybody was there, that I just asked for a minute. I needed to go back to the bathroom. I locked myself in one of the stalls and just kind of tried to process everything for about just a couple of minutes, you know? And so everybody's like, come out. We need to talk to you. And I needed a quiet moment, Stacey. I mean, I was completely overwhelmed by the moment.
It's funny because I'm picturing your face right now, and you did have a look on your face as if it looked like, holy crap, this is actually happening. Wait, is this actually happening? Because it took so long for the pop-up to come down. And then you grabbed your head and fell to your knees and it was, oh God, that was such a great moment. And, you know, I can't believe it's almost 22 years ago. How is that possible?
I know it's crazy, right? I mean, I get young Yankee fans now that know me more as a broadcaster than as a pitcher. I actually had a couple of questions, like, you know, of, oh yeah, you're the broadcaster. They had no idea whether I was a player or not. So we're getting old. That's for sure.
So I hope you enjoyed this episode of Locked On Yankees as much as I did. It is a pleasure talking with David Cohn, and there's going to be a part two because we talked for so long I had to split it into two episodes. So look for part two on Monday. But for now, that's it for this episode of Locked On Yankees, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Once again, I'd like to remind you that you can listen to this show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the new Odyssey app, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Fantasy Baseball. One more thing, if you could be so kind, please rate the podcast and spread the word about this podcast to your fellow Yankee fans. We would really appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend, and I will talk to you all on Monday. Thank you.